folks. This is Pastor Mike Hoggard coming to you from Watchmen Studios with another Watchmen video broadcast, The Child of Hell. We started looking at this this idea of the phoenix last week. Let's go to the scriptures and sort of get the idea of where we're going. This is Manasseh in 2 Chronicles 33, who did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, like unto the abominations of the heathen, and the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. Then, as you remember, it's going to list off a list of 13 things that he does. The 14th thing that's mentioned is he's going to put an idol in the temple of God. We are going to get there, okay? And already, this has turned out longer than I thought it would be. And I was looking at the next set of things on the list. He observed times, used enchantments, used witchcraft, dealt with familiar spirits and wizards and so on. And I'm already hip deep into laying that out, all right? So the Lord gives us the time, and we're going to redeem the time, all right? It says, verse 3, here's the list of 13 things. He built again the high places, which Hezekiah his father had broken down, and reared up altars for Balaam, and made groves, and worshipped all the hosts of heaven, and served them. He built altars in the house of the Lord, whereof the Lord had said, in Jerusalem shall my name be forever. And he built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. Here we go. This is what we started on. He caused his children to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. And we're just going to stop right there. We talked about how this valley, this picture of things down low, it's a picture of hell. It was on fire all the time. The valley of the son of Hinnom is actually the concept used in the word Gehenna, which means valley of Hinnom. And it basically is this place where they did all these burnt sacrifices of babies. So the idea was that there's the birthing of a child of hell, sort of like a Baphomet, which means the baptism of fire. That's what we were looking at last week concerning what the phoenix represented. The phoenix is all about diving into the fire, building its nest and so on, and it's on fire, and fire reduces it to ashes, and then out of the ashes comes up, it is resurrected or born again, which is how some of the wording of it is. And we find that Baphomet signifies Baphe Meteos, baptism of Metis, or baptism of fire, or the Gnostic baptism, an enlightening of the mind, which, however, was interpreted by the Ophites in an obscene sense as fleshly union. And, of course, we have that image of Baphomet, and he is obscene. He is all about this fleshly union. And so we kind of left off just sort of discovering what the phoenix was, what its symbolism meant, and so on. Here is an image, a classic image of the phoenix. It has the solar rays coming out of its head, so it tells you there's a link with the sun god. It is coming up out of the fire. Its colors are scarlet and crimson and purple and so on. And then we noted that most all ancient religions had this idea. They worshiped the sun, and they saw, when they saw the setting of the sun, and going into the underworld, going underground, because they knew it set over here and ended up over here. So they said, oh, that's got to be a circle. Okay. So they knew it traveled through what they thought was the underworld. And when it comes up in the east, then it's having a rebirth and so on. Of course, again, that's all a corruption of Christ, who is the light of the world, the Son of Righteousness, who rises again from death. And that's what Christ did. When he died, his soul went down to the lower parts of the earth. But he wasn't down there screaming in agony and all this. No, he was down there preaching to spirits in prison, the Bible says. And he was setting captivity free. He was taking all those in Abraham's bosom and sending them to paradise, to the paradise of God. And then he, on the third day, he rises again, just like the sun rising with the Son of Righteousness rising with healing in his wings. But the idea of the sun is this imagery of the phoenix. It's on fire. It goes down. It comes back up. And this happens every day. So this is one of the reasons why the symbolism of the phoenix and sun worship was connected. And we were touching on that last week. And I just thought it was interesting because I was doing the research on things that are related to Phoenix, things in this world that are related to Phoenix. And we talked about Phoenix, Arizona, being right close to or right at the 33rd parallel. There's a reason why, and we'll show you in a minute, okay? And their basketball team is the Phoenix Suns, okay? And why? Because of that same imagery. It goes down into the fire, through the underworld, and comes back up once again. Now, we noted that that was one of the ideas behind what we see in Isaiah chapter 14 concerning Lucifer, who is the light bearer. Think about it, all right? It says in verse 11, thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the vials is like violin, stringed instruments, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou, see, he was birthed in the morning. How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. But verse 15 says, yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. And so, I mean, this is real. I remember where I was when it dawned on me what this was all about. I was sitting in Walmart waiting for my wife. Her and my daughter was doing some kind of wedding shopping or something like that. And I'm just going, that's cool. Here is Lucifer, the sun god, and he is ascending into heaven. He is exalting his throne above the stars of God, because as the sun comes up, the stars vanish. He is sitting also on the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north, because not only the sun rises east and sets in the west, it also rises in the south and rises up to the north and then back down to the south again. It does that every year. It takes all year to do it, but it does it every year. All right, that's so neat the way God designed that. But anyway, once he goes back down, he said, I will be like the Most High. That is like the sun being at high noon, we call it. It's at its highest point in the sky. That's what we call noon. But then it starts going back down again, and that's what that's saying. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. And I noticed that, mentioned earlier, that Phoenix, Arizona, being on the 33rd parallel, that matches some things that we have talked about before. Here's the Japanese flag. Notice that it has the sun in the middle, and it has these rays coming out of it. There are 16 white rays and 16 red rays that are coming out of this sun. That's a total of 32 rays, and the sun being in the middle is 33. The same thing with the Jesuit symbol. And I'm stop right here. I'm just going, the Jesuit symbol matches the Japanese flag. Okay, now, it would be wrong to assume that all Jesuits really are Japanese, or that all Japanese really are Jesuits. No, because we know that God confused the languages at Babel, and he scattered all the tribes and all the peoples all over the place, and they all have little pieces of the Antichrist spirit or the Antichrist doctrine. They all have little pieces of it. And sometimes those pieces match together. They all worship a sun god. They all worship a fertility goddess. They all have this this concept of a dying god who is slain and is in the underworld, and he is scheduled to be brought back again from the pit and so on. But this Jesuit symbol is the sun symbol, and again, it has 16 straight rays and 16 little squiggly snake rays coming out of it. That's 32, plus the one in the middle is 33. The 33 kings that were killed by Moses and Joshua. Moses killed Og, the king of Bashan, and Sion. Both of those were giants on that side of Jordan. And then when Joshua went into the promised land, he killed 31 kings. I love that. They killed 33 kings to get the promised land. I gotta do this. I love this. Okay. Morals and dogma. There is the number 33 on the triangle above the crown on the double-headed eagle. The double-headed eagle is the androgynous god. He is ancient future. He is forwards and backwards. He is left and right. He is male and female. Okay, he's human and beast, human and God, and so on. And then we have 32 stars under his wings. Same symbolism here. Same thing, all right? Because these are the stars, along with this, 33% of the stars of heaven fall to the earth, a third of them. Actually, it's 33.333333, all right? You know that. But anyway, that's what this matches that Japanese flag, and it matches the Jesuit symbol, all right? 32 plus the 1 is the 33. So they killed the 33 kings so they could get the promised land, all right? Then, what I was going to show you last week, and we just ran out of time, may run out of time again today, but I just like covering this material, and if I see a rabbit, I might chase it down the road a little bit, all right? But the idea of a phoenix is not just something that the Greeks made up, all right? There is this, and naturally, remember, because God confused the languages at Babel and scattered everybody, there was, I think, a secret doctrine, a mystery religion that was part of the religious practices of those who lived in the land of Shinar, the plain of Shinar, or Sumeria, under King Nimrod. He's the first king mentioned. He's the 10th from Adam. That's dominion, all right? It's in Genesis 10, by the way. You can't make this stuff up. No, I'm wrong. Nimrod is not the 10th from Adam. Nimrod's the 13th from Adam, and he's mentioned in the 10th chapter. You can't make that stuff up. Anyway, and when God dispersed everybody, scattered them by tribes, scattered them by languages, and then scattered them by, in the days of Peleg, the earth was divided. So you have the Western Hemisphere and the Eastern Hemisphere. He scattered them all over the place, and they all had little pieces of this mystery doctrine. Ergo, they all had little pieces of this concept of the dying God who's like a bird that shows you that he's a spirit and he is cast down into the flames and he is going to rise again or has risen again, and that's how he regenerates himself. In Egypt, it was the Bennu bird. The Egyptians occasionally, this is from Manly Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages, the Egyptians occasionally represented the phoenix as having the body of a man and the wings of a bird. Dun, dun, dun. Think about Baphomet. Think about the man of sin, the son of perdition. And the wings of the eagles usually denote that this is not just some ordinary man. The wings of the eagle represent, or the wings of a bird or whatever, usually represent that it is of the angelic realm, cherubim, seraphim, or whatever it is. So it's a cross between the two. The cherubs in Ezekiel chapter 1 and Revelation chapter 4, they have the likeness of a man. They have one of their faces as the face of a man, but they also have wings as well. So this has given us the idea that the Bennu bird in Egypt, or the phoenix, is not really just a bird, although it's represented that way. This is a spirit. Okay, this is maybe even a hybrid who has gone into the flames and will rise again one of these days. I found this in my notes. Okay, I was doing some research on this, and I collect a lot of information in my Evernote account. And I got Evernote here, got it on my phone, my tablet, all my computers. I love it. You keep sending me information, I'll keep storing it because it'll come in handy. But somebody sent me this. This is from one of these naturopathy eat roots and live website. Now, I'm going to be nice about this. Obviously, I'm not into health food, okay? Obviously. I'm not opposed to those who are. I am not, all right? But I want you to be careful. The Health Ranger, you know, some of you know who I'm talking about. He is a New Ager to the core. And every now and then he'll write an article that I think is interesting. But you got to be aware of his deadly ideas, because they don't come from the scriptures. It comes from New Age practices and concepts. When he starts talking about all these life energies that are flowing through you, and you've got something in you that's keeping them from flowing in you, you got to watch that. It's not in the Bible. But anyway, watch out for these health food websites and these naturopathy websites and so on. Here's one called Young Living, and they sell these little pills in bottles and things like that that they say is going to help you live, it's going to kill cancer, it's going to do all these things. Notice that they use the Bennu bird from Egypt. They refer to it as the phoenix. Notice the sun there. See? They're connected together, aren't they? Phoenix Life and Leadership Training. And this, again, is from the Young Living website. This is a course that you can take. Because of the sun symbol, because of the Bennu bird and the phoenix concept, I wouldn't touch this with a 20-foot pole. I would stay away from this because this is a package of New Age beliefs that they're going to try to teach you, and more, I have not even looked at this, but I would say more than likely they're going to use the word God in this little package to make you think that they believe in God and believe the God of the Bible. I don't think so. I would not trust it. But you see, again, the point is that this idea of the phoenix is not just some metaphysical way out there thought. This is commonplace, and it's becoming more commonplace every day. In Russia, they had a version of what they called the fire bird. I'm just kind of moving through this. Feng Huang was it's like a rooster type bird that it represents the union of the yin and the yang. Okay, and again, we're dealing with the fire bird. We're dealing with the phoenix. It goes down into the flames, it comes back out again, and it represents the union of the yin-yang. That's what Manly Hall said earlier when he talked about there were some who believed this vulgar idea that it represented the fusion of opposites like male and female together. At least now we're being consistent, even though it's a different name, it's a different sort of concept and so on, it's still the same idea. This represents the Antichrist. Then we have, here we go, I dealt with this several years ago, a man by the name of Conchita Wurst. Take a look at him. He won the, what was it, the 2012, 2013, something like that, Eurovision, maybe 2014, Eurovision singing contest. It's sort of like the American Idol, okay, or The Voice or something like this. One of these singing competitions, and he won. Now I want you to look at him, because his name is Conchita Wurst. I think he's from Belgium, and I want you to look at him. He's got the face of a man, obviously got some testosterone working there on the facial hairs, and he's got the hair of a woman. His song that he sang when he accepted the award for the best singer was called Rise Like a Phoenix. We just saw back here this Feng Huang bird from China was the union of the yin and the yang, the fusion of opposites. And here is the fusion of opposites in one body, yin and yang, male and female, together in one body, and he's singing Rise Like a Phoenix. Here's the lyrics to the song. No, I'm not going to sing this. I have not even listened to the song. Here's the lyrics to it. Rise like a phoenix out of the ashes, seeking rather than vengeance, retribution. You were warned. Once I'm transformed, once I'm reborn, I rise up to the sky. You threw me down, but I'm going to fly. Now I'll try to sing the last part of it. And rise like a phoenix out of the ashes, seeking rather than vengeance, retribution, you were warned. I know it was pretty bad, wasn't it? It wasn't any worse than a man coming out wearing a beard and women's hair talking about the Antichrist rising back from the pit that he's in, the smoke of a great furnace. And here he's going to come rising out of this thing, coming out of the ashes. He's not seeking vengeance, he's seeking retribution. You see, that is, and I can tell you, having dealt with the young man in our community who decided to put a wig on and a dress, 17 years old, and go to the high school girls' locker room and the girls' bathroom, I can tell you, the gathering that they had in his honor in our hometown was full of these militant sodomites who are vowing that for every one of them that has been, their feelings have been hurt, or someone called them a name or whatever, they're vowing retribution. They're going to pay back, all right. They're going to get their share of vengeance or whatever it is they've got planned. These people have a bad, evil spirit in them. Okay? So I want you to... You were warned. That's what the song says. You were warned. And he got done singing the song. Flaming... Take a look at the picture. Flaming wings coming out of his image. And everybody's going, yay! Conchita Wurst! The man that looks like a woman! Revelation chapter 9. Take a look at this. Verse 2, and he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose out of the rose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace. There it is. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. And in verse 7 it says, and their faces were as the faces of men, and they had hair as the hair of women. And I'm just going, the first time I saw that, I'm going, that's Revelation 9 is what that is right there. It's the face of a man and the hair of a woman. Now, I want you to look back on here. See the imagery here of Revelation chapter 9. And I thought at first, where it says Conchita Wurst and it has two red stripes and a white stripe, I thought at first that that was like the equality sign. I see bumper stickers everywhere in America. They'll have an equal sign. What does that mean? They are for marriage equality. In other words, two men who kiss each other on the mouth can have a marital contract sanctioned by the government, all right? I thought that was what it was, but that's not. That is the flag of Austria. I said Belgium all ago. I was wrong. That's Jean-Claude Van Damme, okay? It's the flag of Austria. So, and I'm going, oh, okay. Because I thought it was equality sign. I'm going, yeah, I'm going to jump on this, but that's not what it is. The flag of Austria. In fact, there's an element in that flag that's missing that's not on that image of Conchita Wurst. Here is the flag of Austria. Cue the music. Bum, bum, bum. Same thing. The double-headed eagle and the Masonic eagle and the phoenix, because the phoenix represents yin and yang and androgyny, andro meaning man, gyne or gune meaning wife or woman. That's when you go to the gynecologist, that's where the word comes from. It's Greek. Androgyny is male, female together in one body. That's his flag. That's the Austrian flag. We're headed. The beast is coming, people. Get ready for it. All right. Now, even the Jews, the Hebrews, the Israelites, they had a concept of a phoenix-like bird that they called the Chol. Chol. All right. And where they get that from, actually the word Chol is in the Hebrew Old Testament, and it's actually the word, here we go, sand. Do you remember? Remember where John saw the beast rising up out of the sea? He was standing where? On the sand of the sea. I don't know the connection yet, but it's a bum, 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 all right? Anyway, the word chol in Hebrew actually is the word sand, and it is translated that way in the King James, but the Hebrews took that idea, and actually I think they based it on this verse, and I'll show it to you in a minute. They took that idea and they placed it upon this mythical bird that has wings and probably the body of a man that goes down in the flames, and out of the ashes he rises again. Because we know for a fact the Jews pulled in all these mystic doctrines from all of these places that God told them not to do. And so here, take a look at this. Job 29, verse 18. Look at what it says. Then I said, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. Now, let me stop right here. We learned from the phoenix that the phoenix made a nest out of frankincense and myrrh. Yep, same thing they brought to Jesus, all right? He made a nest out of that. He made his nest. It catches on fire. He burns to ashes, but then he comes back out of those ashes, and his days are multiplied as the sand. The idea of being multiplied as the sand, God used that all throughout the Old Testament, telling Abraham, I'm going to multiply your seed as the sand of the sea. In other words, it's going to be innumerable like angels are. And so the idea here in Job 29:18 is that it is dying in the nest like the phoenix, and when it rises again, it will never die ever again. And I just kind of did some checking on this to make sure that, you know, that my I don't know Hebrew. My understanding of the word coal, even though it's translated sand like it is in the King James, I shall multiply my days as the coal, as the sand. When they printed the Harry Potter book and they said it's Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, the Hebrew translation of that book uses, in place of the word phoenix, it uses the word chol. Probably not even pronouncing that right, all right? So anyway, but the idea is that all of these civilizations all over the world had this same concept of a bird, a firebird, a bird that dies in the flames and rises up again. Even the name phoenix, let's take a look at this. It's derived from Phoenicia. The name Phoenicia, they're known for their making of red and purple dye from conch shells. The Greek word phoinos means blood red. Think about that, because the color of the phoenix is red. In Revelation chapter 17, now it's going to give you an understanding of what that is. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast. See it? Scarlet-colored beast. That's what phoinos is. Full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns, and the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color. Stop right here. The woman is wearing the colors of the mythical phoenix bird. Phoenix because he was named after Phoenicia, and Phoenicia was named because of the red and purple dye that they were able to manufacture. They sold this dye and they traded with it. They probably got some great wealth out of this, all right? But that's where the word derives from, this concept of red and purple. And here is the woman clothed in red and purple. Now, think of the opposite. We are the church. We are dressed in what color? White. Why? Because that was given to us by who? Our Savior. Robes, white and fine linen, white and clean, which is the righteousness of the saints. And the righteousness of the saints is not their own works. It is the righteousness of Christ. So think of this idea. We are adorned by Christ. She is adorned in the colors of guess who? The phoenix. The Antichrist. The scarlet-colored beast. Isaiah 1:18. Come now, let us reason together, saith the Lord. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be white as snow. Though they be red like crimson, they shall be as wool. Think of this. Here, according to mythology, the phoenix is a bird that is red and scarlet and purple. Red in the Bible is the color for sin. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be white as snow. They'll be red like crimson, they shall be as wool. And here again, let me bring this analogy. Here's the bride. Here's Christ. When he clothes us of his own righteousness, we are clothed in white linen, fine and clean. The man of sin cannot clothe his people in fine linen, white and clean. He has no righteousness. He is the man of sin. What is his color? Red. Scarlet. Though your sins be as scarlet, though they be red like crimson. You see that? So study clothing in the Bible. Study. I won't get into all that, but do your own study of that. I want to study that too. The idea that we are clothed upon by Christ, this world then is going to be clothed upon by the phoenix, by the beast, the scarlet colored beast, because of their iniquities. He truly is the man of sin. He is related in the Bible to, guess what color dragon? Not a green one, not a purple one. Red one. Revelation 12:3, and there appeared another wonder in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his head. Isaiah 14:29, rejoice not thou, whole Palestina, because the rod of him that smote thee is broken. For out of the serpent's root shall come forth a cockatrice, and his fruit shall be a fiery flying serpent. Now let's stop right here. Didn't we just see, let me go back to that slide here, okay? My editor, Lindsay's going to pull that up on the screen. The image of the Feng Huang, the firebird in China, is that of a cock or a cockatrice, okay? Isn't that cool? Where did they get the, where did the Chinese get the idea that their firebird was in the image of a cock or a cockatrice, or a cockatrice is like a two-legged dragon with the head of a rooster on it. That is Feng Huang to a T. So look at this verse again. For out of the serpent's root shall come forth a cockatrice, and his fruit shall be a fiery flying serpent. We have in this detail here the image of what the phoenix is. Whether it's in China and his image is that of a cock or a rooster, or a dragon with wings, or some sort of other flying creature. Here we have the Bible calling it what? A fiery flying serpent. And where did it come from? The serpent, the dragon, who is also red and scarlet colored. Just like Christ comes from the bosom of the Father, God, Antichrist comes from the root of the serpent himself, the dragon, Satan, the devil. The ancient Aztecs in Mexico had a god called Quetzalcoatl. Quetzalcoatl was a fiery, flying serpent, just like the phoenix, and just like the dying god. He dies, he's in the underworld, and he is awaiting, he's going to come up out of the ashes of his own death, and he's going to rise again. Numbers chapter 21, the Bible says in verse 4, and they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom, and the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. And the people spake against God and against Moses, wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there's no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth this light bread. And the Lord sent what? Quetzalcoatls, fiery plumed serpents, the cockatrices, the phoenixes. He sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. That idea here of Israel complaining against God and God sending phoenix birds, fiery flying serpents, fiery flying serpents, cockatrices. That's what I was going for. God sent them to bite and poison and destroy his people because they were complaining. They were ready to turn back away from God. Remember what God told Moses to do? Put a pole, put a brass serpent on it, fiery serpent on it, and when they look upon it, they'll be cured of the poison of the serpent. Poison of the serpent is what he said in Genesis chapter 3. Christ said, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And one of the things I want to point out to you is that the phoenix is the opposite of Christ. The phoenix is not a symbol of Christ. And there are a lot of churches, I'll show you a little bit here in a little bit. There are a lot of churches who use the phoenix symbol to represent Christ. It's the wrong Jesus, guys. It's the wrong one. Jesus is not a serpent. But when he hung on the cross, Colossians said he says he made a show of his enemies openly, triumphing over his enemies on the cross. That's why he said, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up. Christ is the opposite of the phoenix. That idea of looking on the serpent and looking on the brass pole and so on and living and them complaining against God and God sending in those fiery serpents was what Paul was talking about, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 9. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed as serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed as a destroyer. Now all these things happen unto them for in samples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. You know what he's just saying here? All that stuff you're reading in the Old Testament, you're going to see it again. They are written to us for examples, unto whom the ends of the world are come. Get ready, people. The phoenix is about to rise again. Now, the phoenix is also a symbol of new birth by fire. 2 Chronicles 33. He caused his children, this is what we're dealing with, he caused his children to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. Manly Hall said in the Mysteries it was customary to refer to initiates as phoenixes, or men who had been born again. For just as physical birth gives man consciousness in the physical world, so the neophyte, under 9 degrees in the womb of the Mysteries, was born into a consciousness of the spiritual world. So this religious practice that Manasseh, other people before him, we know it was going on in the land of Canaan, that the heathen that God mentioned, he said, you learned that from the heathen. This religious practice of causing their children to pass through the fire, I'm reasonably sure that that practice, the idea behind that practice, was that of regeneration or rebirth, or it was sort of like when Masons meet and they're going to initiate someone in the first 3 degrees of Freemasonry, the entered apprentice. They reenact a play, and they literally do this, called the Death of Hiram Abiff. I was trying to think of rebirth and so on. The Death of Hiram Abiff. And Hiram Abiff was the one who had the secrets to building temples, right? He had the lost keys. And these ruffians, these three, they smite Hiram Abiff in the head. He falls backward. And then a strong grip of the lion's paw. I saw two masons shake hands like that one time. The strong grip of the lion's paw comes down and raises him back up out of the fire, out of the ashes, literally, and resurrects him. And now we have the restoration of the lost keys on how to build or rebuild a temple. It's all about rebirth. It's all about resurrection. And I think that when they were passing their children through the fire, just like Masons reenacting Hiram Abiff, these people are causing their children to act out the secret of the phoenix and his rise again. Obviously, when they threw their children into the fire to make them pass through the fire, kids never made it out. And I'm going to show you a little bit more either today or next time about what that means. And I'll give you a little bit of it now. The idea that if we sacrifice something for the God will then in turn do something for us. Stinks to be the kids, doesn't it? The little babies that they threw into the fire. Didn't work out so well for them. But we must sacrifice them in order to receive a benefit from the God. I think that's what was on their mind, and I think that same idea is going on right now. So again, we've been looking at the phoenix, been looking at it in mythology, how other places in the world, they all had little pieces of it. They had an image of a firebird. The Chinese had this image of a rooster-like creature that was their firebird. We found out that that is none other than the serpent's root, which is the fiery flying phoenix, cockatrices, and all of that stuff. And now we have names of cities like, and I mentioned this earlier, Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix, Arizona is on the 33rd. It's on 33rd north latitude from the equator. It's the former territory of the Hohokam tribe, which was an ancient Native American tribe, but it was later abandoned. It was later founded by a former Confederate veteran who thought the area would be good for farming. I've been to Phoenix. I never thought that. Okay? Anyway, the name Phoenix, he chose the name Phoenix because he knew that these ancient Native American tribes, the Hohokams, lived there. He knew that they lived there, but their civilization was gone. And so he was going to have a new city rising from the ruins of that old settlement. And even the city of Phoenix uses that logo as their symbol. It's this symbol of the phoenix bird on the 33rd parallel. We have other modern symbolisms of that in Atlanta, Georgia, which is also, again, on the 33rd north latitude. There is a statue in Atlanta that you see it there. It features a phoenix bird and a goddess representing Atlanta, the city, Atlanta, Georgia. The phoenix rising up out of the ashes, because the concept, well, this is a Civil War memorial. The concept was that during the Civil War, Atlanta was burnt nearly to the ground because of the war. But a new city rose up from the ashes, and so they memorialized that by putting a statue of the phoenix god rising up. It's a statue of the beast. It's an image of the beast is what it is. They have an image of the beast in Atlanta, Georgia, on the 33rd parallel. They also have a football club, not NFL football, but a soccer club called the Atlanta Rise. Look at the sun symbol. Look at the phoenix symbol. Atlanta coming up out of the flames. This concept is everywhere. Nagasaki. Take a look at Nagasaki, Japan, which is sandwiched between the 32nd and 33rd parallel. I mean, it's like right there. You know what happened? World War II. The United States bombed Hiroshima and then bombed Nagasaki, Japan with the atomic bomb. Literally turned that entire city into ashes. Look at it now. There are a few memorials. There's one in Hiroshima. There's one in Nagasaki. But you literally have, on the 33rd north latitude, you have a city literally that was rebuilt out of the ashes of the old. Do you remember the 2012 London Olympics? Do you remember all the hype on the internet about the 2012 London Olympics, that there was this Illuminati game card that featured like the famous clock tower in London crashing to the ground, and so people were speculating that hundreds of thousands of people were going to be killed in the London 2012 Olympics. And none of that happened. It's a false prophecy, and people believed it. But what did happen was, on the closing ceremony of the 2012 London Olympics, they featured the rise of the phoenix from the flames and from the ashes. And Elise Bailey wrote, "The Masters of Wisdom will restore upon earth the ancient mysteries and institute again the order of initiation." And I want you to think about what initiation is. When you join a fraternity, you're initiated. Okay. Thank you, sir. May I have another? When you join other such clubs, masonry, odd fellows, things like that, there is an initiation. The word initiate means to get it started. Okay. This is the initial thing that we're doing. All right. We're going to initiate this person's membership and so on. Bailey says that there is going to come to, we're going to restore the ancient mysteries, but we have to initiate everybody into it. I think that, you've heard me talk about this before, about a fire baptism coming. I think that is what this is referring to. I think there is going to be an initiation performed on the entire world that's going to bring them to the point where they're going to restore the mystery religion and the god of that mystery religion, which is the Antichrist, symbolized by the phoenix. Here's another image of it. Something that is turned to ashes, fire and ashes, and a new something rising up in its place. Isn't it interesting that they did not rebuild the Twin Towers? Those were turned to ashes. Now we have something entirely new rising up out of it that's 1,776 feet tall. It's supposed to represent the year of the Declaration of Independence. Could it not also represent May 1st, 1776, when Adam Weishaupt formed the Order of Perfectibilists, when he formed the Illuminati? Okay? But you see the concept. The old was brought down to ash. And by the way, this building, let's go back here. This building, The Twin Towers, remember how old it was? They started steel construction in 1968. In 2001, they brought it down. What does that tell you? 33 years. And it turns to ashes, and a new one rises up in its place. Da, duh, duh. All right? Here's a magazine cover. I've seen this for years. The Economist. This goes back into, I think, the 90s or early 90s, late 80s, something like that. Get ready for a world currency. Notice the number 10. Notice the fleur-de-lis, the crown on top of this phoenix. Phoenix, the euro, is seen rising out of the ashes of American dollars. Wait a minute. That's our money. Yeah. You see, we know, we're conspiracy theorists. We think there's UFOs and Bigfoots walking around everywhere, and we think they're going to turn the world into a new world order and have a world currency, and all of our money's going to be worthless. Bingo. Because you cannot replace a single world currency. You cannot bring in a single world currency because you have all these competing currencies out there. Here's what you got to do. You got to make them worthless. You got to make them worth absolutely nothing. So when people are, they've got all this cash money laying around, American dollars, and the economy burns to ashes, and all of that money is absolutely no good, then out of those ashes you can have a new currency. They want all of the nations of the world to unite together. They want a new world order. Okay? You can't get that right now because we're all competing with one another. We all go to the Olympics and try to outrun, outswim, outjump, outdance, outthrow everybody at the Olympics. We have wars going on all over the place. We have competing nations, and nobody wants to be one. So what you got to do is you got to burn down all of those things so out of the ashes can come a world government. You're going to have a world religion. Okay? Get ready for that one. Get ready for there going to be a world religion. It's already, the elements of it are already there. It's in place. It's just waiting for a catalyst to ignite all of the other religions on fire, burn them thoroughly so they're nothing but ashes. I think, I don't know what it is, where it is, when it is, or what. I think there's something covered up, buried somewhere, that when it's revealed, it is literally going to change the mind. There's going to be a paradigm shift in the thinking of every person on this planet except Bible believers, and it's literally going to change the religious concepts of everyone on the earth. I think some people already know what it is. I think they're hiding it. I think they're keeping it. Okay? I know there's a conspiracy. I know it from the scriptures. I know it. Okay? Mystery Babylon always tries to keep him covered up so that he's not revealed. Even 2 Thessalonians 2 tells us that he is going to be revealed in his time. And so, in order to have one single world religion where everybody in the world is worshiping the beast, you have got to destroy all of the other religions. And some people speculate, what if UFOs landed? Ronald Reagan said, what if our world came under attack by aliens from space? He said that to the UN, and we're going, where did he get that from? Think about it. I mentioned that this concept is already set. You see it, the fall and rise of Hiram Abiff in the Masonic Lodge. Here you have a reenactment in the Catholic Church. It's called Ash Wednesday. Ash Wednesday is when they put ashes, a mark on your forehead. Think about it. And that occurs exactly 46 days from Easter. Dun, dun, dun. 46, number of human chromosomes, 46 words that the serpent speaks to Eve in Genesis chapter 3, 46 words that they speak in Genesis 11 concerning go to, let us build, go to, let us do this, 46 words exactly. Okay? Where is that temple of God? We're headed in that direction, not only in our study of the scriptures, but with all these religious concepts, they're all going to put the pieces together one of these days to form this new God that they've got. Okay? Now, where was I going with this? Now, take a look at 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which heaven shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. I've been mentioning that the phoenix is a symbol of rebirth, regeneration, literally life from death. Sort of like Frankenstein. All right? It would appear that this whole, remember, the devil is like the mirror of everything God and Jesus is. He's the opposite. And he does opposite things. Christ is going to rule for and reign for 1,000 years. Hitler thought he was too. His 1,000-year Reich. He thought his government was going to last 1,000 years. So we have the earth and everything in it, and it's all going to melt with the fervent heat. And what comes after that? Is it all over with? Is God just said, well, I'm glad to be done with that. That was, whew, I'll never do that again. No. He has a new heaven, a new earth after the fire. Let's read it. The elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved. Think of that word dissolved. What manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be, there it is again, dissolved. The elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. So, God's concept is he's going to melt and burn the heavens and the earth in a fervent heat and dissolve it. Remember Baphomet. He's got 2, 3 here on this hand, and it says solve. It means dissolve. It's part of alchemy. The devil is copying God's plan. Because after the earth and the heavens are dissolved in the fervent heat, God forms a new heaven and a new earth. You see it? So what the devil's got in mind is a copy, very corrupt copy of what God is going to put in place. And you notice that he uses the word dissolved. And here's Baphomet with the phrase salve on his arm. We have to dissolve it first before we can build a new one. And I started chasing down that word dissolved. Isaiah 34:2. Look at this. For the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He hath utterly destroyed them, he hath delivered them to the slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood, and all the host of heaven shall be dissolved. And the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down, as the leaf falleth from the vine, and as a falling fig from the fig tree. This is a connection to Revelation 6:12. And I beheld, when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell unto the earth. That's exactly what he says in Isaiah 34. And all their hosts shall fall down. That's what he says in Isaiah 34:4. The stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as the fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a rushing, I know I'm adding the word here, rushing mighty wind. That's what they heard on Pentecost. A mighty wind. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were removed out of their places. What's going to happen here? The angels, the stars of heaven are going to fall into the earth, and the heavens are going to be dissolved, he says in Isaiah. So in Psalm 104, verse 4, who maketh his angel spirits, his ministers a flaming fire. We're putting that together now. We're having a baptism of fire. And what the devil means to do, what is actually the plan of God, this is his idea. He's just using the devil to enact it. This plan is these angels falling out of heaven. Flaming fire angels. Salve. Dissolving the old stuff, turning it to ashes. Coagula, making it live again, bringing it all back together again. Look at Job chapter 30. Look what he said. Verse 19, he hath cast me into the mire, and I am become like dust and ashes. Now let me stop right here. Job chapter 30, and then there's a place in Lamentations, I think it's Lamentations 2 or 3 or something like that, somewhere around in there. They're almost identical. They're very, very parallel passages. And I think that they are describing the Antichrist, the Phoenix. Look at it. He hath cast me into the mire, and I am become like dust and ashes. I cry unto thee, and thou dost not hear me. I stand up, and thou regardest me not. Thou art become cruel to me. With thy strong hand thou opposest thyself against me. Thou liftest me up to the wind, and thou causest me to ride upon it, and dissolvest my substance. Then he says, I am a brother to dragons, and a companion of owls. My skin is black upon me, and my bones are burned with heat. I think that that is a description of the beast and his state. Lamentations, you'll find something very, very similar. Here it is, Lamentations 3, verse 2. He hath led me and brought me into darkness, but not into light. He turneth his hand against me all the day. My flesh and my skin hath he made old. He hath broken my bones. Think about Christ, they didn't break his bones. He hath builded against me and compassed me with gall and travail. He hath set me in dark places, as they that be dead of old. He hath hedged me about, that I cannot get out. He hath made my chain heavy. Also when I cry and shout, he shutteth out my prayer. He hath enclosed my ways with hewn stone. He hath made my paths crooked. Think about a prayer labyrinth. He was unto me as a bear lying in wait, and as a lion in secret places. He hath turned aside my ways and pulled me in pieces. He hath made me desolate. He hath bent his bow and set me as a mark for the arrow. And then on in verse 15, he hath filled me with bitterness. He hath made me drunken with wormwood. He hath also broken my teeth with gravel stones. Here it is. He hath covered me with ashes. It matches what we see in Job. He's covered him up. You see that in the book of Lamentations. He's hiding him down there and he's burning in the ashes. Okay? Here's what Manly Hall said. While Apollo most generally represents the sun, Bacchus is also a form of solar energy, for his resurrection was accomplished with the assistance of Apollo. The resurrection of Bacchus signifies merely the extraction or disentanglement of the various parts of the Bacchic constitution from the Titanic constitution of the world. This is symbolized by the smoke, remember Revelation 9, or soot rising from the burned bodies of the Titans. The soul is symbolized by smoke because it is extracted by the fire of the mysteries. Smoke signifies the ascension of the soul, for evolution is the process of the soul rising, like smoke, from the divinely consumed material mass. Now, let me tell you what he's getting at. Hall knew and understood all these phoenix symbolisms. He understood all these dying God references. And here's how he put it, that really all of these are a symbol of man's evolution. It's not just the phoenix that goes into the ashes and rises out, a regenerated, reborn creature. He said that all of these mysteries taught that man was going to do that. Man was going to be burned in the flame and rise up out of the ashes and have a new, he's going to ascend like smoke. He's going to have a new consciousness. He is going to be God-like. That's what Hall saw in all of these phoenix and all these other mysteries. Apollo, resurrected from the dead. Bacchus, resurrected from, and Bacchus, or Dionysus, the god of wine, was an androgynous god, male and female both. Here's what he says about the Bacchic rite, the rite of Bacchus, which is like Hymen Abiff. It's like the phoenix rising. They're all similar and talking about the same idea and the same concept. The Bacchic rite centers around the allegory of the youthful Bacchus, which is Dionysus or Zagreus, being torn to pieces by the Titans. These giants accomplished the destruction of Bacchus by causing him to become infatuated by his own image in a mirror. After dismembering him, the Titans first boiled the pieces in water, think of the flood, and afterwards roasted them. Pallas rescued the heart of the murdered god, and by his precaution, Bacchus was enabled to spring forth again in all his former glory. Jupiter, the demiurges, beholding the crime of the Titans, hurled his thunderbolts and slew them, burning their bodies to ashes with heavenly fire. Are you getting that? Think of man on the earth, burning their bodies to ashes with the heavenly fire. Out of the ashes of the Titans, which also contained a portion of the flesh of Bacchus, whose body they had partly devoured, the human race was created. Thus, the mundane life of every man was said to contain a portion of the Bacchic life. For this reason, the Greek mysteries warned against suicide. He who attempts to destroy himself raises his hand against the nature of Bacchus within him, since man's body is indirectly the tomb of this god, and consequently must be preserved with the greatest care. Now, let me give you the Bible portion of this, all right? What he's saying here is that in this Bacchic ritual, the idea was that every man had a piece of this divine in him, like the divine spark of the Kabbalah. Every man has a little divine spark, a little piece of this, because we have risen out of the ashes of the old Titans, which were to the giants, and the Titans had consumed part of the body of Bacchus. So the idea that they ate the God, and that they now have the God living inside of them, is what Roman Catholics do when they have the Mass. They eat the God. Now they, no, do you have Jesus inside of you? Oh, yeah. Yeah, just ate him. Yeah. That's the sacrifice of the Mass, people. Sorry about the burp. But anyway, the idea is that all mankind has this little piece of this dying God in them. All right? And one of these days, man's going to rise, get to all the ashes, he's going to come up out of the ashes, and this God is going to be restored to his former glory. That's what Revelation 17 says. He was and is not and yet shall be, and he'll go into perdition. All right? So that's the mythology part of it. All right? He says that the man's body is the tomb of this God. Matthew 23. Remember what Jesus said about the scribes, the Pharisees, the hypocrites? That on the outside they appeared nice and white and clean. They were like whited sepulchres that looked nice on the outside, but inwardly they were full of what? Dead man's bones. Paul said, in me, that is in my flesh, Romans 7, he said, there dwelleth, literally dwelleth, no good thing. And so with the initiation of mankind, just like that phoenix symbol, going, passing through the fire, out of the ashes comes the new man, the transhuman. And out of that comes the phoenix rising again. And here's what I found. I'm just looking at my notes here. I'm just going, yeah, I remember this. There was actually, in case you think, Hoggard, you're pulling too much out of that Manly Hall stuff. It doesn't have anything to do with the Bible. Sihon, who was the giant king of the Amorites, I think, the one that Moses killed. Did you know that in the Bible, he was referred to as a flame and a fire? Here it is right here, Numbers chapter 21. For Heshbon was the city of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab and taken all his land out of his hand, even into Arnon. Wherefore, they that speak in Proverbs, think about it, say, come into Heshbon and let the city of Sihon be built and prepared. For there is a fire gone out of Heshbon, a flame from the city of Sihon. It hath consumed Ar of Moab and the lords of the high places of Arnon. Woe to thee, Moab, thou art undone, O people of Chemosh, who hath given his sons that escaped and his daughters into captivity unto Sihon, the king of Amorites. And remember again, he maketh his angel spirits, his ministers of flaming fire. Sihon, the king of the Amorites, when he went in and killed Ar, the king of Moab, they made a proverb about him, a song probably, and they said, the fire is gone out of Heshbon and a flame from the city of Sihon. That's a reference to Sihon, the king. That's who that is. They equated him as like a consuming fire. The giants, who were part human and part what? Part angel. They were the sons of God, daughters of men. So we have this, we've looked at all the physical characteristics of the phoenix, in other words, how it affects the earthly institutions, like the new currency rising out of the burning ashes of the old currency, the two world trade centers turning into ashes and now rising up out of the ashes of that into like a new form or having a new body. Then when I mentioned about the religious aspect of this, I showed you the Catholic ritual of putting ashes on the forehead, and 46 days later, you have the resurrection of the dying God. Okay? The symbolism is there, people. But it's not just in the ancient mystery religions. It's not just in the cults. It's not just in the mystery dogma of Roman Catholicism or the Eucharist. It's happening in churches that identify themselves as non-Catholic, Protestant, non-denominational, as it were. You hear me talk about, this is Bethel Church, you hear me talk about the anti-Bethel Church. And I mean that in every way, shape, or form. And I'm not trying to be mean about the poor people that attend there who are being sucked into all these demonic, devilish, satanic doctrines. I wish they would hear one of these videos and come out and realize that they're not doing right. One guy I know called our ministry and said, your videos rescued me literally from the cult of Bethel Church, Redding, California, led by Bill Johnson. And I've talked about this before, but let's put it now in the context of the Phoenix and the Child of Hell and rebirth. Because they have in that church what they call a fire tunnel. They will have as part of it, they will perform a ritual in their church. Just like the resurrection of Hiram Abiff, just like the resurrection of Bacchus, just like the Phoenix at the closing ceremony of the 2012 Olympics, just like Conchita Wurst singing, I rise like a phoenix, you were warned. They have a phoenix ritual in their church. They call it the fire tunnel. What they'll do is they have all these elders or whatever, these staff members of the church or just people who they think are more spiritually mature, and they'll gather on two sides. And the ritual is that when you pass through this line, they're going to lay hands on you and they're going to give you this anointing and you're going to be passed. Listen to the words now I'm going to use. They're causing their children to pass through the fire, people. I mean, take a look at it. This is images of the Bethel Church fire, not this Bethel Church, the anti-Bethel Church fire tunnel. They form two lines. They cause their children to pass through the fire. And the idea is that they go in one way and come out another. Dun, dun, dun. That's the Phoenix. That's making your children to pass through the fire. And I keep using that phrase referring here because I found an article, a testimony from someone who attended the anti-Bethel Church in Redding, California. You got to see, I'm going to put it up on the screen. Children exit fire tunnel on fire. Kurt, a first-year BSSM student, and his wife Marla or Maria Johnson shared this testimony. We are so thankful to be at Bethel. We had just finished some extended prayer and fasting in which we focused upon our children. On a Sunday night, we took our four-year-old and one-year-old through the fire tunnel at church several times. They absolutely loved it. Well, of course, they thought it was, oh, look, we're going to do the tunnel again. They absolutely loved it. We did not see any immediate differences in them, but we knew the Lord was working. The following Sunday, Roland and Heidi Baker, I've talked about her before, were ministering. As we drove into the road heading to the church, Maria said, wow, I really feel God. Our four-year-old had said, I do too. This was something new for him. We parked, and as we were walking into the building, he exclaimed, I feel God. I feel Him in my tummy. We then explained to him about the scripture that says that out of the belly shall flow rivers of living water. We usually keep the kids with us during worship at church so we can train them to worship and be in the presence of God. As they were worshiping, the youngest was slain in the spirit and lay on the floor calmly for a minute or two. This little guy is so active, it was obvious a supernatural event. Here's the testimony of people who went to Bethel Church and literally caused their children to pass through the fire. One of them even being slain in the spirit. That's Hiram Abiff. We practice no such things here at Bethel Church, Festus, Missouri. I believe the fire that we want in our church is none other than the lamp of the Word of God. These people performing rituals on their own children. These poor kids may have just had their doom sealed. Here's a church called Phoenix Church. You say, well, it's in Phoenix, right? Look at their symbol, their logo. Again, remember, the Phoenix bird is not the same as the resurrected Christ. We found out from the scriptures that it's the serpent's root, the cockatrice, who is a fiery flying serpent. They're not the same. Check this out. Kundalini. Kundalini is, you've heard me talk about it before, it's a really great dish with bread. And, no, I'm just kidding. Kundalini is, it's practiced in yoga. Churches all over the place are doing yoga. And it's not, it's for Jesus. It's yoga for Jesus. We're encountering Jesus when we do yoga. Okay? Look at the image here. I found this on the internet, but the image of someone who is in this yoga stance. You know what image they're making? A pyramid. Remember the word pyramid? Has the word pyre in it, P-Y-R-E, which means fire. The image of someone doing yoga is that of a pyramid, a flaming pyramid, with the head representing the capstone. It's called Kundalini's fire. Again, Manly Hall said, sufficient similarity exists between the Masonic Hiram and the Kundalini of Hindu mysticism to warrant the assumption that Hiram or Hiram Abiff may be considered a symbol also of the spirit fire moving through the sixth ventricle of the spinal column. The exact science of human regeneration is the lost key of masonry. For when the spirit fire is lifted up through the 33 degrees or segments of the spinal column and enters into the domed chamber of the human skull, it finally passes into the pituitary body, which is, I think, the pineal gland he's referring to, where it invokes Ra, the pineal gland, and demands the sacred name. It's about, Kundalini is about the rise of the phoenix, the rise of the Antichrist from the flaming pit that he's in, and being put now on the top of the pyramid, the capstone. That's what we're talking about. He says, the scorpion stings with its tail, and for this reason it has been called a backbiter, a false and deceitful thing. Calmet, in his Dictionary of the Bible, declares the scorpion to be a fit emblem of the wicked and the symbol of persecution. The dry winds of Egypt are said to be produced by Typhon, who imparts to the sand the blistering heat of the infernal world and the sting of the scorpion. This insect was also the symbol of the spinal fire, which is Kundalini, which, according to the Egyptian mysteries, destroyed man when it was permitted to gather at the base of the spine, which was the tail of the scorpion. Why am I reading this? Because this talks about this Kundalini fire being the symbol of the scorpion and what happens in Revelation 9. When the pit is opened up and the smoke comes out like the smoke of a great furnace, what comes out, what rises out of the ashes? Kundalini's fire. The scorpions rise out of the ashes. And what do they have? The sting. They have the sting. Paul talked about the sting of death, and we have the victory over that. So now, contemplate this for a minute. Remember, we were talking about the sun rising. It gets to high noon, then it goes down in the west. Here's Lucifer. I will ascend into heaven, exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. When someone is standing, when someone's sitting, especially when they're in a yoga stance, what is it, what part of the body that represents the Most High? The head. The idea of the spirit fire of Kundalini rising from its pit where the scorpions are, the flames, rising from there and coming up the 33 bones of the spine into your head is exactly what was mentioned in Isaiah 14. I will be like the Most High. The head in the Bible represents who? Christ. So we're dealing with Antichrist, who wants to be like the Most High, the serpent, and so on. Here's something I've talked about this before. A guy named Leonard Sweet. If there was ever a marriage of Christianity and New Age thought in one single person, it would have to be Leonard Sweet. He is a New Ager who wants everybody to think he's a Christian. And apparently, it's working pretty well because a guy named Rick Warren thinks he's a Christian. They teamed up back in the 90s. On a program called, a teaching called The Tides of Change, Riding the Next Wave in Ministry by Leonard Sweet and Rick Warren. Leonard Sweet wrote a book called Quantum Spirituality. Here's what he said about Kundalini's fire, which is the phoenix, the scorpions, the beast, the Antichrist. A surprisingly central feature of all the world's religions is the language of light in communicating the divine and symbolizing the union of the human with the divine. Muhammad's light-filled cave, Moses' burning bush, Paul's blinding light, Fox's inner light, Krishna's Lord of Light, Bohm's light-filled cobbler shop, Plotinus fire experiences, and then Bodhisattvas with the flow of Kundalini's fire erupting from their fontanelles, and so on. Leonard Sweet said that Kundalini's fire, that Muhammad's light-filled cave, think about what a cave represents. It represents the pit, a hole in the ground. He said that Kundalini's fire and Muhammad's revelations, the light-filled cave, matched Paul seeing the blinding light on the road to Damascus and Moses seeing the burning bush. Guess who was present in both of those? Moses' burning bush and Paul's blinding light. None other than Jesus Christ. Do you see now what Leonard Sweet is doing? He's getting you to accept that in the Kundalini, they're really worshiping Jesus. They just don't know it yet. So this is why then Kundalini and yoga and everything else being practiced in the church. I read an article, you know, Pastor Michael online here a few weeks ago, a pastor who basically said that all these Eastern practices like yoga, I think you'd be able to find it on YouTube. I think called it PMO was something to do with yoga. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, this pastor was telling, especially missionaries to India, go ahead and practice yoga and do all the stuff they're doing. Because after all, we're really worshiping the same God. And you'll bring them closer to Jesus by doing what they do than by preaching that old gospel book. They won't understand that. But yoga and Kundalini, they'll understand. And it's a replacement Jesus. And Paul said that people would bear with the man who would bring in another Jesus and another spirit more so than the teachings of Paul himself. And that is exactly what's going on. Here's kind of getting to this point here. I'm almost done. But the idea is that mankind, with Manasseh passing his children through the fire, I think is a foreshadow of mankind being ready to embrace this Baphomet, this fire baptism, and a rise out of the ashes of the old, this new man, this God man, and the beast, the Antichrist, who sit in the temple of God. Remember, that's the idea. Other religions. We have a follower that is First Nations up in Canada. We would call them Native Americans down here. And her family does this. She wrote to me about and told me about it. But Native Americans, First Nations people, they have this practice that they call the Sweat Lodge. Here's a picture of it here. And I was listening to her kind of teach me a little bit about it. Their family does it and so on. People she knows, they still do it to this day. They'll go in the sweat lodges. The idea is it's a Native American practice, First Nations practice, where they'll build this dome. And what that is, it represents a womb. It represents the heart of the earth. And in the midst of that dome, they'll build this fire, or they'll use heated rocks that have been heated in coals, and they'll take them in there. In other words, you're going to have this really, really hot place that nobody wants to go to. And here's what happens. Once the sweat lodge has been built and everything's ready and it's real hot in there, people will go descend into the sweat lodge. They literally sit down. And they're in there for a while, and a lot of times they may have experiences. They may come in contact with the great eagle or whatever their animal spirit is going to be. But there's the idea that the sweat lodge represents going in to the heart of the earth where it's on fire and then coming out a new person, a man. Now you have this spirit with you that will accompany you all of your life. Remember, people, it's the same idea. In the Native American religion, the sweat lodge is the place where the phoenix goes into and is reborn when he comes out. Those people who practice this are coming out as phoenixes. They're not coming out as Christians. They're coming out as phoenixes. I remember showing you this maybe a couple weeks ago when I first started this about the Phoenix, the American Chemical Society, uses the Phoenix rising up out of the flames as its logo. Where did they get this from? Modern chemistry derives its practices, and a lot of things that are still done to this day were performed by alchemists. It has the same idea, same word, chemistry and alchemy. Alchemists were seeking the philosopher's stone, the sorcerer's stone, the key to immortality, the elixir of life. Under the guise of trying to turn lead into gold, what they were really searching for was a way that a man would become immortal. And so in, you see, these alchemists, they all used fire of some kind. Notice here we have Hermes Trismegistus holding the globe of the earth, and he's pointing toward the X fire, and it has the sun and the moon in it. Guess who that is? That's the phoenix. And it looks like a phoenix. Has the talons and the wings of a phoenix or a bird, and it's a representation of the androgynous god, the sun and moon together, the yin and the yang and so on. That's what we've learned about. But anyway, there's this concept in alchemy called the fire of alchemy, or the alchemy of fire. Libido, here's a book, Libido and the Divine Spark, and you see the imagery of a phoenix rising up out of the flames and so on. You know what libido is, don't you? I'm not going to have to explain it to you. But that idea definitely, definitely is part of having the divine spark erupt into a full flame of divinity. And the idea of alchemy is that it is the fusion of two opposites together into one whole. All right? So alchemy has seven stages to it. Think of the seven planets. Think of the seven heads of the beast. Think of the seven chakras and so on. It starts out with calcination, dissolution, which is solve, dissolving, separation, conjunction, fermentation, sublimation or distillation, and coagulation. And remember, Baphomet has solve and coagula written on his arms. Calcination, I'm going to explain this. Calcination refers to reducing the base material to ashes. So again, with the symbolism here, we understand that what alchemy is all about, it's about turning a person into a god. It's about rebirthing the Antichrist in this world. Being born again of corruptible seed instead of incorruptible seed. Dissolution refers to making the solution of the ashes in water. Coagula, which means to solidify, the final transformed state. What emerges is the appearance of the androgynous God-man. Here's some of the images that you'll find. Here we have a black phoenix bird rising up out of the ashes, and he's pulling out of the ashes the androgynous God. It's male and female. Here's another one. Here we have a body, the body of a male, but it has the head of a male and a female on the ashes or on the flames. Here's Baphomet, Salve, and Coagula. I found out that there's actually a superhero called Coagula in a comic book. Okay? No, not quite as popular as Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, or the Hulk. But the idea, nonetheless, is Coagula, this superhero, was the first transgendered superhero. Take a look. You can tell. They drew it as a guy, and it's got the parts of a woman. Reconstructing the Deconstructed, the Doom Patrol. That's who this Coagula is part of. She is part, or he is part of the Doom Patrol. And notice what she's saying there at the top. Lo, I call upon the mysterious powers granted me by the great goddess, who is, after all, my sister. Now, I'm going to wind it up with this. Throwing a lot of information at you in one video. But here's when I first looked at this, passing the children through the fire. This was the first thing I thought of. And I prayed about it, been trying to make sure that I knew what I was talking about. There's a lot of information on the internet. Some of it good, some of it not good. There's a lot of stories that are on the internet that people want to believe, but they're really, and they have an essence of truth, but the totality of them is not true. And I'm not trying to give certain companies a free pass. Because I had this idea that really what this idea of passing the children through the fire is all about is, let's sacrifice the children so our lives can be better. And we're doing that in this country. They do it in other countries as well. It's called abortion. But she gets pregnant, and all of a sudden now, she doesn't want this baby to ruin her life. See, you know what that is? That's called without natural affection. She doesn't want this baby to ruin her life. And I suspect the Jews probably had such a bad spirit on them that it probably did not bother them as they tossed their children onto the fire. They were without natural affection. But these women, and even men, they'll have this baby aborted. They'll have this child murdered in cold blood, slain, blood spilled. They'll do that because they didn't finish college yet, or they're working on their career, or it would be embarrassing because my daughter was with him and that wouldn't look good on us. So let's kill the baby. It's all about the adults, the parents, making their lives better by sacrificing the children. There's more than one way to do that, but just recently, and here's an image here I thought was very, very keen to this idea. It shows Molech, the bull, with the flames in his lap, holding his hands out, the sign of Planned Parenthood being on this, and these women offering their alive babies on the altar of Planned Parenthood, because Planned Parenthood got caught bragging about and talking about how, even though it was illegal, they were harvesting the body parts from these live babies and then killing them, selling their tissues, selling their hearts, their brains, their kidneys, their cells, to make money out of it. Why? What are these? Why do they need baby hearts and baby brains and baby kidneys? And why do they need these things? Stem cells and things like that. What is that all about? Because you'll hear that the medical industry is using some of these cell lines to formulate some of their new medicines or to experiment on things and so on. And it's all about curing Alzheimer's, curing cancer, getting rid of headaches, the cure for the common cold. It's all about making the adult's lives better or even extending the adult life. The sacrifice of the children. Now, I'm going to say one thing here about vaccinations. I've received vaccinations. I received them when I was a child. I've received them as an adult. The first time I went to Kenya, I had to get probably about 11 different shots. And I got them. Why? Because I wanted to go to Kenya. Okay? And I want to go back. I want to preach to those people. I love them. All right? I could not, in my conscience, preach against receiving vaccinations while at the same time knowing that I've received them. And if I want to go back to Kenya again and they require it, I may have to have another one. I know there's differing ideas on this, and I let me assure you, if you do not want to vaccinate your children, I don't believe you should have to, because I'm with you. All the other kids are vaccinated, so why should they worry about your kid getting the mumps? Right? So I'm with you. Okay, and I think there is evidence out there that suggests that vaccinations and the chemicals they use in them are not necessarily good for some kids. And some kids, I think, have turned out not so well. Various maladies and diseases that people think come from vaccinations. And I can't say that they're wrong. But again, I don't think that if a person is vaccinated that that's giving them the mark of the beast or it's altering their DNA and it's going to make them unsavable. I do not believe that. Yet. I don't believe it. Yet. Because we all know that something is going to come in whatever form. I don't know exactly what it is, but something's going to come that's going to alter mankind. That I believe. But from a moral standpoint, I have a problem with some things. Number one, we know that aborted fetus tissue has been used in some vaccinations. Not all of them, but some of them. We know that there is a certain cell line, and this cell line is being manufactured by certain companies who own it, that the original cell came from a legally aborted fetus. I always say it was a legally aborted fetus. Like, that makes it okay. Well, it was legal, so it's okay. In other words, they took a dead baby that they had just murdered and harvested some of its cells. And what they were able to do, we know what cells do. They divide. They divide and make more cells. And there has been a cell line that's been preserved from the original cell that was taken from an aborted fetus. And it is used, and I'm not clear on this yet, that's why I'm not saying a whole lot. It's either used in the testing of vaccines, or that cell line is used in the manufacture of the vaccines. Either way, morally, I am opposed to any company using the harvested parts of an aborted human being. I'm against that. Now, I am for blood transfusion. I am for heart transplants, kidney transplants, liver transplants, bone marrow transplants. I am for all of that. But the law is that in every case, a donated liver, donated heart, donated lungs, they have to come with the consent of the person who donated them. Okay? Not so with aborted fetuses. They were killed against their own will and their own instincts to survive. They were killed, and they took their body parts. They used them for some vaccines. And I think that's wrong. And I think God's keeping track, not necessarily of the people who have received these vaccines, because a lot of people simply don't know this for whatever reason. But the people who are doing this, their name's on the list. Then, we have a company called Sinomics. Sinomics makes flavor enhancements. Here's what they do. They make a flavor enhancement that will cause a product to taste sweeter, even though the manufacturer of the product took some of the sugar out. So in other words, the company can take some of the sugar out for health benefits and replace it with a flavor enhancement that gives the idea that this is still sweet. They also have flavor enhancements that make things taste salty, while the company can remove some of the salt content. You know, and I know that box foods, manufactured foods, things like that, they're loaded with sugar and they're loaded with sodium. Okay, make me splat out like this. Okay, so Sinomics makes these flavor enhancements where companies can pull back on the amount of salt and sugar that they use. All right, now Sinomics has a product called Complimix, and that Complimix was tested. It was tested on an aborted fetal cell line. Here's the facts from an article on this. The HEK293 cells were generated in 1973 by transformation of cultures of normal human embryonic kidney cells with shared adenovirus 5 DNA in Alex van der Ebbe's laboratory in Leiden, the Netherlands. The human embryonic kidney cells were obtained from a single, apparently healthy fetus legally aborted under Dutch law. So there is this cell line, kidney cells, HEK293, that was taken from a legally aborted child. See, it just makes it, they're trying to make it sound right. In the Netherlands in 1973, cells reproduce, and so this company has taken these cells and they sent them all over the world. Sinomics says that when they're testing their flavor enhancers, instead of having a room full of people who are tasting things, they know that certain of these, I don't know, it has to do with chemicals and things bonding together and so on. I don't understand it all. But Sinomics uses this cell line to test thousands of flavor enhancements, using the cell line to pick the right one. That's how I understand it. they are wanting to sell this to Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, Nestle, you name it, all these manufacturers of food and drinks. Now, after doing the research, you may have heard that if you drink certain brands of Pepsi, you're drinking aborted fetal cells. I don't think that's true. But still, from a moral standpoint, we're using the harvested tissue of a dead baby who never consented, first of all, to its murder and never consented to its body parts being used at all. We're doing that not so that we can increase someone's life who has Alzheimer's, so we can make our Coca-Cola taste better. So, you know, we're back to this issue of we are sacrificing the children to make our lives better. And it's done in abortion mills, it's done in the medical industry, and it's done by people who just don't care about human life anymore. So we're growing into a nation and a people whose hearts have been turned against even their own children. And it's something that God said was going to happen. He said, you're going to use your own children to save your life. Deuteronomy 28:49, the Lord shall bring a nation against thee from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand, a nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. And he shall eat the fruit of thy cattle and the fruit of thy land until thou be destroyed, which also shall not leave either corn, wine, or oil, or the increase of thy kind, or flocks of thy sheep, until I have destroyed thee. Let me stop right here. It says right here that this nation of fierce countenance, Daniel says they're going to have a king of fierce countenance, that when he comes, he's going to eat the fruit of the land, and he's going to take all of their corn, wine, and oil. You know what Masons do at a Masonic cornerstone laying ceremony? They have the cornerstone laying there, and the cornerstone is chiseled out of rough stone. Now it's the smooth ashlar. And when they lay the cornerstone, they give an offering, an oblation, to this stone of corn, wine, and oil. Exactly what God said the nation and the king of fierce countenance was going to eat. Think about it. Anyway, corn, wine, and oil. Verse 52, and he shall besiege thee in all thy gates until thy high and fence walls come down, wherein thou trustest throughout all thy land, and he shall besiege thee in all thy gates throughout all thy land, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. Thou shalt eat the fruit of thine own body, the flesh of thy sons and of thy daughters, which the Lord thy God hath given thee in the siege and in the straitness, wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee, so that the man that is tender among you and very delicate, his eye shall be evil toward his brother and toward the wife of his bosom and toward the remnant of his children, which he shall leave. God said that because this nation of fierce countenance comes, they were going to eat the fruit of their own body. If we are not there yet with vaccines and Pepsi-Cola, we're going to be one of these days. Sacrificing the children unto Moloch, causing the children to pass through the fire. Why? To benefit the adults. What a world we're living in right now. This Bible is coming to life right in front of our very eyes. Read it, meditate on it, study on it, pray about it. If you got questions, ask God. God will give you, He'll give you so many answers. The only place in the whole Bible where it says God is liberal is He'll give wisdom liberally to you. I think it's in the book of James. Get in this Word, people. Okay? Get in this Word and God will show you the truth. It's good to be with you. I got to run. You've sat here and listened to me long enough. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.